Hi there, welcome to this week's edition of The Front Page. My goodness, we've got some meaty content this week. We're looking back on a fascinating coral eclipse. We're looking at racing's effort to axe the racing tax, and it was a big week for multiple champion jockey Oisin Murphy. My name is Lee Mottishead. I'm joined on the programme this week by my colleagues Peter Scargill, who's in the studio here. Hello, Peter.
Morning.
Hello. And at home in Cheltenham, James Stevens. Hello.
Hi, Lee. Good to be on show again.
And good to have you here, James. Good to be back in the chair. It was sadly, I wasn't at Sandown on Saturday for the eclipse. I watched it when back home in the evening, and I was on my feet in the closing stages. I've got to be honest, Pete, I was on my feet because I'd backed Ombudsman at 4-1 after Royal Ascot, and I was rather hoping he would hold on. He didn't. You were there. You saw it in the flesh. It was a good race.
It was a very good race, Lee. Yeah, good race. Tactically interesting. Developed into a real one of those thrillers. You get up the Sandown Hill, don't you, where your horse goes clear and yeah. You know, is the chaser going to get there in time? But good performance by Ombudsman, really, to put a distance between him and the others.
Yeah.
But the way Delacroix was able to overcome what he did to win, particularly, again, off the back of a underwhelming performance, which Aidan O'Brien's becoming something of a specialist in doing, isn't he? Bringing these horses back from poor runs or poorer runs to produce excellent runs. Was great to see. And I say I was there. The crowd were very energised by it. It was a race that had lots of people engaged by it. So yeah, a good day, a good race, and a good winner on the 50th anniversary of Coral sponsorship. So.
Yeah, that was an anniversary. Sandown's 150th anniversary as well this year. So a good year to have a solid eclipse. They bumped the prize.
Oh, it was better than solidly. It was a good eclipse.
Good eclipse.
Don't underplay it.
No, just because you weren't there. Just because you make a fair point. £1 million this year as well for the first time. So they increased the prize money. So it deserved a more than solid renewal, which it got. James, what was your take on what, as Pete says, was a very tactical affair? So I watched it after the event. I was going in there thinking I'd be seeing the sores open and Ryan Moore try to dictate a steady pace in front on Delacroix, or maybe Christophe Seumann do that on Camille Pissarro. In the end, it was completely different to what I expected.
Yeah, it was a great race. I certainly wouldn't call it a solid eclipse. I thought it was a very strong eclipse, but in terms of tactical pace and the early stage of a race, it was a bit of a mess. It was a case of a lot of jockeys going, you could see almost just in their way their body language was, they're going plan B, plan C, and eventually the first two furlongs, the jockeys had just sat back and thought, right, this is a position we're in, let's try and make the most of it. And Ryan Moore on Delacroix, I mean, it probably didn't look the ideal way at all. I mean, the horse looked probably one of the first ones you could draw a line through coming into the straight, but found plenty. It's clearly a strong stay at that distance. Omnisman, I mean, look, he's a very, very good horse. Was the race going to run to suit in the way it transpired? Possibly not, because we know he's a horse who's got strong finishing speed, as you showed in the Prince of Wales's, and a race like the Judmont International is probably going to set up more for him. Still run a cracker. It's so, so difficult giving that weight away to those three-year-olds at this time of year. I think it's a real tough ask, and actually, this is the first time the generations clash, and I always think it's possibly advantage to the three-year-olds at this time of year. And then as you come later in the season, things do balance out just slightly. So I'm fascinated to see how this will transpire. I mean, one of the jobs I had last week was to look at the entries for the Judmont. And in the back of my mind is we've got a really good eclipse on Saturday. But I couldn't help but thinking, my word, Field of Gold, the Japanese Danon de Kyle, who won the Japanese Derby and the Shima Classic, Kalandagan. I mean, we have got possibly one of the great races if they all turn up. They never always do after you look at the entries, but it was in the back of my mind on Saturday that I'm really glad that Delacroix, who was the only horse in the field on Saturday who hadn't won a Group 1, emerged as that horse, because now the one thing that Judmont was missing at York was a really, really good Aidan O'Brien contender, and maybe we've got one now.
Yeah, and after that, way more than solid eclipse on Saturday. Fantastic eclipse, in fact, on Saturday, as you both gleefully reminded me. Do we think we have an outstanding winner in Delacroix? Because his profile before the Derby had been going very much in the right direction. he showed a tremendous turn of foot on Saturday. Yet Ryan Moore pointed out afterwards he would be very happy to drop back to a mile. He's going, sticking over the distance, actually going a bit further at York in the Jumbo International. Where do you think he's going to fit into the programme as the year goes on, and how high will he go?
Well, in terms of how good he is, obviously he's a very good horse because he's won the Eclipse, beating the right horse in Ombudsman there eventually. But, you know, it's one run, isn't it? And previous to that, it was wins in trial races for the Derby. So it's hard to come to two firm conclusions. So I'm going to sit on the fence, Lee.
Good man.
On that one. But it couldn't have worked out any better, really, for Aidan O'Brien in terms of the horse winning, could it? Because you've got Henri Matisse in your mile races now. Before that, he was beaten by Field of Gold, who's probably going to go up in trip for the Jumbo International anyway. After the Sussex Stakes, where he may or may not be ridden by Colin Keane. And then you've got Lamborn, dual derby winner for those races, where he's going to go for the St. Ledger. You've got Whirl, who's a possible horse for things like the Arc or as well. And then you've got this horse slotting in perfectly at the mile and the course division. It just shows you, the strength that Ballydore have in all of these races. And they can just move them around. And as they move them around, they're finally to say, he could drop back in trip, but he doesn't need to, does he?
Doesn't need to.
So he'll go Jumbo International Irish Champion Stakes. Champion Stakes? Why wouldn't you?
Hold on to that thought about horses dropping back in trip for the end of this segment. Mm. But just
hold it.
Hold it for now. James, Pete referenced Field of Gold there, Colin Keane. While we're wrapping up the 2 days at Sandown, as a result of a race on Friday, Colin Keane looks set to miss them out on Field of Gold in the Eclipse, in the Sussex.
It certainly looks that way. I mean, we thought the story was done and dusted at Ascot, but turns out it's not. There's another potential chapter at Goodwood. Yeah, I think it's more than likely that the WIP review committee will look at the rider Colin gave at Sandown and will rule him out of Glorious Goodwood, and as such, Field of Gold ride becomes available. That will be fascinating, who gets that ride. I mean, I don't know if the bookies are going to price it up as a novelty thing. You'd have to say O'Sheen possibly is one that's going to come in. He does pick up a few spare rides. Of course, Kieran Schumark, who had given him the ride in the Guineas and subsequently lost the John and Fady Gosden job from it. Could he come back and get it? I think that would be personally quite unlikely. It's a huge blow for Colin Keane because this is the horse who really leads the line for Judmont. And in this next phase of his career, this was potentially the horse that was going to define it. And to not be a part of his run at Glorious Goodwood will be a real shame. There's not going to be many runners in the Sussex, so that really lends itself to openings. People like William Buicks and people like James Doyles and those sorts of riders who you wouldn't necessarily associate with them. If Sussex was going to be a small field, then suddenly there's a lot of big names who are going to be sat in that weighing room waiting for the call-up. And there's not many jockeys who turn down Field of Gold. Fascinating to see how it transpires, but the saga just doesn't seem to stop.
No. James, just keep with you for looking at the rest of the weekend. There was big race action in France and Germany on Sunday. Tremendous finish to the Prix Jean Prat and a historic finish to the Deutsches Derby.
Yeah, we'll start in Germany at Hamburg because I was following the action on Sunday, and a memorable, to say the least, victory for Nina Beltrami, winner of the German Derby, first female to win the race. I think only the second female rider to win a classic in Germany. The first time a woman had ridden in the German Derby was 1979. She mentioned on the TV via Google Translate that they've been trying since 1979 to break the duck, and it happened in fantastic style. She absolutely whizzed home this horse. Hock Conrig, I think it's pronounced, a long time since I did my GCSE German, to break the hearts of Carl Burke on Convergent, who looked like Clifford Lee had got it. He charged the challenge right at the right time, but pinned right on the line. Fantastic result for all involved. The crowd at Hamburg went absolutely wild. Lots of women in the crowd who particularly enjoyed it. It felt, just from watching it via a live stream, that it felt a little bit special. So I'd love to know what it was like being there. A fantastic result and a memorable one for all involved. And listen, you know, we talk a lot about female riders in Britain and Ireland. And perhaps I think in many ways, when you look at international racing, we take for granted the some of the success that they have. Of course, they're still a long way from being 50-50 or anything like that. But I think when you look at other jurisdictions, perhaps British racing is at a point where it's quite far ahead. And you look at other parts of the world, and it's great to see that that is really being shared across the world. So congratulations to all involved. Convergent, really good run in second. A gutting for Carl Burke, was only hoping to be the second British trained winner of a German Derby, but surely his time will come. And if nothing else, remember, this is the race which found the big Triumph Hurdle contender in Palladium 12 months ago. Over to France, the Prix-Jean Plat, I mean, which was a particularly interesting race this year for me, because we've now got that 7 furlong Group 1 at York. And so I was watching it with an eye to that, which really will change the complexion of the season, especially over 7 furlongs. It previously was always about the foray on Art Weekend as the only 7 furlong Group 1 open to horses 3-year-olds and above. And that's always a bit suspectable about ground. The winner was a horse called Wood Shauna for Francis Graffard and Resolute Racing, who, of course, had Goliath, the American-owned enterprise, who seemed to be doing some really successful stuff. British horses were Irish trained horse, Align in Winter. The big Derby favourite was third. And Shadow of Light, of course, third in the Guineas, was fourth. Really close finish, but the two French contenders pulled clear. Maruna Charlie was second. Could be one for that City of York. So, yeah, good results in Europe, and even better big races to come next week, this week.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that front, Pete, so no joy for Godolphin over the weekend in the big Group 1 races, but they've dropped in a surprise contender to the July Cup, the Albatta July Cup on Saturday in the shape of Notable Speech. What do we think of that?
You can understand why they've done it, because, you know, he was he third or fourth in the
Queen Anne. Didn't get a great run to the
race. A bit unlucky around, but, you know, there's the... You know, you think he might struggle against some of the good miners, particularly as he's taking on the 3-year-olds later in the season with the weight element that James mentioned earlier on. So you can see why it's done like the strongest July Cup on paper, does it?
Does not.
You know,
not even below solid potentially.
Below, yeah, not that we want to anticipate the results, of course.
No, you might be a 10-length winner. Maybe indeed. Notable speech.
So you can see why, and obviously being able to supplement his CV with another Group 1 in the July Cup down the road from where he's trained. You can see the thinking behind it, can totally see the thinking behind it, whether or not he's quite quick enough for that race. Point you raised previously about him, you know, he's shown a lot of good speed in the all-weather when he was going on his all-weather run, but, you know, he wasn't racing against such high-calibre horses. So, you know, it can be deceptive in terms of how it looks, although I appreciate the clock was also in his favour. So, I get it. I think it's probably a good idea. Adds intrigue to the race. We always want intrigue and interest.
We love a bit of intrigue.
What about you? You're a man who likes the July Cup in sprinters. And that sort of thing.
I think he's a fascinating contender. Mm. I think if you look back at those runs at Kempton on the All Weather and the Guineas, he won them all with a searing turn of pace. And the fact that they already have Symbol of Honour in the race, Godolphin and Charlie Appleby, just they really must think this horse can...
He can't be a stallion though, can he?
Well, he can't, no. And realistically, if you look at the Group 1 mile division, certainly it'd be hard to see Notable Speech beating Field of Gold in a Group 1. Maybe his level has now been set over a mile and he has better prospects over 6 furlongs. So I think...
Yeah, and we're all for people trying things. And everyone complains that we're not creative enough with how horses are campaigned. I appreciate mile to 6 furlongs isn't the greatest revelation that's ever happened, but it's different thinking, it's alternative thinking, it's quick thinking, perhaps, given the context of it. So,
well, we remember Ashdell, don't we? A mile and a half down to six furlongs.
I'm trying to get you to that point, Lee. We got there eventually. I suppose Lion in Winter was a mile and a half down to 7 furlongs. So
it can be done.
Indeed, yeah.
Racing has got a number of big problems at the minute in Britain. Most of the ones in Britain are financial, and one of the key issues at the moment is the government's plans to harmonise online betting tax, and Racing's response to those plans accelerated last week. Pete, we got a new phrase, a new mantra, a new motto: axe the racing tax. Explain a bit more.
So axe the racing tax is the phrase or the campaign we're getting, but the BHA is asking the sport to get behind, although frankly, the sport shouldn't need to be dragged along behind it. People can see the potential problems that this would have. So in harmonising the betting tax rates, now at the moment, racing is taxed at a lower rate than online 15% slots.
15% compared to 21%.
Exactly. And the prospects, the Treasury is doing a consultation, that's the word, about potentially harmonising those rates. So we all know that harmonisation, particularly with the government's finances at the moment, off the back of the welfare bill climb down, are not good. So they're not going to harmonise them down. They're going to harmonise them up. So you're thinking at least 21% for both and potentially higher. And you can understand that with the setbacks the government have had, that going after betting companies, gambling companies, with all the money they're making, would seem an easy win. Easy win, get the money in, keep everybody happy, you know. Yeah. But that would be such short-term, short-sighted thinking, because A, it wouldn't raise a huge amount.
About 40 million quid a year.
For the government. But it would have, the knock-on effect it would have, particularly to racing, is multi-millions of pounds. And it's also, it would affect the punter directly. If you are betting on horse racing and the tax rate is increased for bookmakers on betting on horse racing, as a punter, you are going to lose.
Yeah.
That it's simple as that. You will lose because you'll have less competitive odds, there's less offers, and you'll either stop. It's another thing that make you think, well, there's no incentive for me here to bet, or I'm going to go off and I'm going to look elsewhere in the black market potentially, or the guy who is offering me a betting service on WhatsApp to bet. So the potential problems are so much higher than what any gain, conceivable gain, might be out of it. So it's about, this consultation runs to the 21st of July, which is later this month. And it's all about really getting behind this, getting this message home, writing to your MP, speaking with anyone that you can to try and make them realise that this tax would have such a detrimental effect on horse racing, which, you know, spreads so far, has such an impact beyond just the stable or the racecourse, that it stretches into the community. You did a piece earlier in the year with Ben Pooling, didn't you?
Yeah.
Looking at the horse, and I know it's people being able to realise that it's more than just people at the racecourse, people having a bet. It's such a important part in so many communities that it could be hollowed out by this.
Yes, absolutely. And the reality is this has come from within the Treasury, probably from officials within the Treasury who just look at numbers and are trying to bring more money into the Exchequer. It's politicians that racing really needs to persuade, and one of the entities within racing which has been trying hard on that front is the arena racing company ARC. And last week they released a short film that highlighted the importance of racing and essentially the thoroughbred to Britain and to the British economy. James, that was a really interesting film that ARC have put out. Again, it shows very visibly and with real power racing's importance to the country and to the economy, as Pete was talking about earlier on. Ultimately, though, this is going to be down to politics. We know that the government is in a very difficult financial predicament, and racing's job presumably now is to say, well, look, you might bring in 40 million quid a year extra if you harmonise tax at 21%, but look at how much more you are going to damage one of the country's great industries.
That's exactly right. I think Pete used the phrase easy win of the government, i.e. thinking that, well, bookmakers, they make a lot of money anyway. We can just change a bit of tax and bring in a bit of money, given the harsh financial economy that the country is in, that the country don't want to take away from the NHS or key services. You're always fighting with public interest and what the public might not be upset about. And gambling companies are one which, as Pete says, is an easy win. The whole point of this video, the whole point of this campaign, is to tell government that perhaps might not have the deep knowledge, and government ministers and members that might not have the deep understanding of how horse racing is funded, why it's so important, and all the variety of people who are employed by it, is extremely important, because it isn't necessarily an easy win, because there are a lot of people who are going to be affected by it. I looked at the video yesterday. As you will have just seen, I counted 81 different roles and industries. I could well be wrong on that. that are affected by horse racing. You mentioned, you touched on Ben Pauling and the impact of one horse can have on a local community. Live here in Cheltenham. I mean, if anyone knows about how a local community is affected by horse racing, it's possibly me in here and in this place, because not only have you got all those industries that you've mentioned there, they just, I think they just say hospitality. Well, in Cheltenham, it's a lot more variety than that, because you've got all the pubs, the businesses, the hotels, you've got all the taxi services, all of the train services. But not only that, is that money comes into Cheltenham because of the huge amount of interest there is for the Cheltenham Festival. And a lot of the interest in the Cheltenham Festival is because people want to have a bet on the Cheltenham Festival. Well, that money goes into the economy, but it doesn't necessarily stay there. It filters down and trickles down to other areas and other industries. So it's not just those direct industries. There's a huge amount of other industries which are affected because there's so much money being brought in. I thought the video did a fantastic job of explaining that it's not just a case of money from the bookmakers is simply going to the bookmakers. This is a huge, massive industry. It employs thousands of people, and is loved by hundreds of thousands of people. You know, we talk about the fact that the industry is perhaps going to face a financial hit, but Pete is right again about the point of punters. I mean, the idea of having a bet and enjoying gambling is just being chipped away at time and time as a hobby and as something people enjoy. And it's a real shame, because I'm somebody who enjoys it. And I sort of feel sometimes I need to defend that. And it's getting harder. You know, the prices and the odds are going to be affected if this comes in. But you've got to remember as well, you're juggling the idea of, do I really want to have a bet when I might have to trigger an affordability check? There are all of the different impacts that punters are having to deal with. And this is going to be another strain. So quite simply, whether your interest in this is simply, I'm involved in racing, I'm a fan of racing, this is going to hit you in a certain way. So definitely join the campaign, write to your MP. And there's a consultation period. This is a time where the government need to know exactly what they're dealing with, and racing needs to come together and make sure they know exactly the consequences.
Just before we move on, Lee, just to pick up on what James is saying, people don't like paying more tax.
No.
Right, and there's a lot of talk about tax rises at the moment, right? So this campaign, this AXA Racing Tax campaign, and this focused effort over the next couple of weeks, you can make a difference by getting involved in. This isn't some sort of high-minded leave it to the BHA and some, you know, big name trainers or ARC to sort it out, right? We racing showed with the affordability petition that was set up by Nevin Trousdale at the Jockey Club last year, that set up the Westminster Hall debate. If there is grassroots action from people, if there's a weight of support and a weight of appreciation put forward to government about this, you've got a chance to influence policy here. Sitting on your hands and just going, oh, just more tax to pay, oh, it's just bookies. In the end, that's going to have a long-term negative effect. It's 2 weeks, and it's important to be focused and to be proactive during these 2 weeks, because you've got a chance to make a difference. And so that's whether you have a lucky 15 on a Saturday, or whether you're a champion racehorse trainer. There's no excuse not to be involved in this.
I think that's right. And I think the fact that the BHA has been so vocal on this, like in the last week, with referencing this whole racing tax phrase,
and that's not an unfair phrase.
It's not, no. But traditionally, there's been a sense that the BHA has been the last 2 or 3 years a little bit cautious in how hard it publicly presses government, because you've got that thing, you work behind the scenes, but there's always been a view, I think, that government, that officials don't like to be bullied into action or embarrassed into action. Well, I think here the fact that the BHA is being so public emphasises the extent to which they really feel that there is a heck of a serious situation here that could go very badly wrong for racing. The politics of it is fascinating too. So last week in the House, Lisa Nandy, the Culture Secretary, was asked a question about potential impacts to racing from all this. She said all that you'd expect a government to say, that we're friends of horse racing, we want racing to thrive, etc., etc. We had the opposition leader, Kemi Badenoch, attending a roundtable discussion about horse racing in Newmarket, where she said that policymakers don't understand that racing would be very badly impacted on this. It also has to be said that Kevin Badenoch was a cabinet minister in a government whose actions have caused serious damage to horse racing as well. And in terms of the politics of this between racing and bookmakers, there's real interest here, because racing clearly wants the sport, the industry, to continue to be treated differently to how government taxes casino slots, etc. But if government is to bring in more money from the betting industry, if you like, and if racing is to be treated differently, then the obvious conclusion would be you just put more taxation onto online slots, that sort of thing. Racing seems to be talking about racing deserving to be a special case, and clearly it does. But that also highlights the fact that bookmakers won't just necessarily want their other products taxed more heavily. And if they are taxed more heavily relative to racing, could bookmakers then just say, well, okay, as the BGC said last week, bookmakers don't ring fence certain products. If we're hammered across the board, we're still going to look at racing and how we treat that as a product. So the politics of this is difficult for racing and bookmakers, not least because on the affordability issue, they've been very much singing with one voice and ploughing the same line. That won't necessarily be the case on this one.
No, and I don't think racing can be nervous about looking after itself.
Yeah.
You know, it's important. You know, the BHA have done the modelling. This is directly affecting the people employed in racing. So, you know, if there is saber rattling from the bookmakers saying, well, you know, if racing gets treated differently, it's going to, you know, you're going to get got whatever way, it can't be our concern. You know, the concern, this is a racing campaign, this is a racing impact it's going to have upon, you know, we can't be thinking, well, we've got to protect bookmakers, casinos and slots as well, because we'll get done either way. So it's not a reason to be swayed from getting involved in this campaign. It's a racing focused campaign. It's about focusing the treasury during these last 2 weeks of the consultation, and racing needs to put forward its case and not be swayed by anything else. Because if you get swayed by anything else, it'll be weak, and then we'll lose out again, and we can't be weak at this moment, Lee.
Yeah, and as Pete has said, and as the BHA has said, and as many racing participants have said, high-profile racing figures, in the last week, you can make a difference by writing to your MP, contacting your MP over these next 2 weeks. Pete, you were busy last week. You were in court. You were in Reading.
Again, in court, Lee.
You spend a lot of time reporting in court. This time was about Ashin Murphy. Mm-hmm. Just bring us up to date about what happened there and give us a bit of commentary on it.
Sure. So the week after Royal Ascot, Ashin Murphy was the publicity around Ashin Murphy being charged. He was actually charged during Royal Ascot week around an accident he had in April, single vehicle accident where he hit a tree. And he was in Reading Crown Court, not Crown Court, Magistrates Court. Must get that, Reading Magistrates Court, up on drink driving offences. So as you can imagine, there was plenty of people there to see him, and it was a sad moment. It was also a moment of shame for Ashin. You know, he's a four-time champion jockey. He's a guy that's had problems in the past within racing. You know, he's regulatory problems within racing. This is the first time he's actually been up in front of the law. He was fined for, he pleaded guilty to driving over the limit. He was nearly twice over the limit, Lee, 7 hours after he'd been arrested. Yeah. So that they couldn't test him straight away. They had to test him 7 hours later because he went to hospital to begin with. Nearly twice over the drink driving limit, fined £70,000. Lost his driver's license for 20 months, although that can be reduced if he does a drink driving awareness course. And it was, you would hope, a watershed moment in his career, really.
Yes, you would hope. I suppose, if you're being harsh, you'd say the problem is there have been a few potential watershed moments in Ashin's career.
True, but he's not before driven a car whilst drunk into a tree with a female passenger in the car. And, you know, that might sound quite blunt, but that's what happened. You know, this female passenger ended up in hospital with a serious injury. She's out now and she's back and she's fine, which is good to know. But, you know, it was reckless, it was dangerous. And, you know, he's been say he's been found guilty or found guilty, he's pleaded guilty to this. So if this isn't enough of a wake-up call for him, and if this isn't enough of a moment for racing to think, we can't just say, dust our hands of it and say, right, we'll carry on letting you do stuff because you're a brilliant rider. If there's not something materially changing out of this, then you worry what has to happen to get it through. You know, this has to be it for him. He has to cop on really from this league.
Yeah, because he spoke in 2022 of having had a dependence on alcohol. There've been those instances where he's arrived at a race course over the permissible mm-hmm. limit to be riding in races. I said in the past, there'd been what people hope would be turning points. It was the COVID infringement that led to that suspension. Racing has been generally very supportive.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's nothing wrong
absolutely.
With that.
And he's been a very positive contributor. Agreed. To the sport in terms of his interaction with racing fans. But as you say, at some point, people will lose patience. The BHA, as the regulator, seemingly hasn't lost patience as yet. When he came back from that lengthy suspension, conditions were placed on his license in relation to his use of alcohol. Questions have been asked of the BHA since their response to Ashim Murphy's appearance in court. Ashim Murphy continues to be allowed to ride. That doesn't appear to be set to change, but the BHA has talked about maybe putting new conditions on his license. So we don't really know, do we, what is or isn't on that license now, or what was on it at the time of the incident?
Correct, absolutely. The BHA have been coy about what's on his license. They've said this, there were conditions on his license at the time of the crash, but we don't know whether it was still the conditions around needing to remain sober and to steer away from illicit drugs. I mean, because that was an annual, that was renewed annually.
Yeah.
So it may or may not have been in there, we don't know. New conditions on his license, you would expect to be the very least that they need to do. You know, a few years ago, we had the high profile incident of Freddie Tulicki, you know, being paralyzed from the waist down with a fall at Kempton when Graham Gibbons was supposedly having people smelled alcohol in his breath. You know, the BHA need to make sure that they are protecting fellow participants at the race course. So the conditions on Ashim Murphy's license need to make sure that when he is competing at the race course, he is 100% sober of everything. But they've been terribly weak, the BHA. They've seemed so behind the game the whole way along. And when the statement came out after Ashim Murphy's guilty plea on Thursday, it didn't give you great confidence that the regulator is effectively regulating. And how many times have we said this on this show or in copy? It just seems there's not enough being done to resolve this. It's all after the fact. And say a lot of it in the end is going to have to fall down to Ashim Murphy, those around him, the boardings. Obviously, he rides out for a lot. The Qatar racing team, he remains involved in that. Now, this needs to be sorted out. And I understand sympathy for Ashim Murphy. I understand empathy for Ashim Murphy. I understand everybody wanting to move on from this because he's a brilliant jockey. He's a very likable person. He's engaging. But we can't be having this every couple of years, Lee, or every year, something happening in this or sort of finding a way to excuse it somehow. So, I mean, I don't know what you think, I don't know what James thinks, but this was a serious incident that happened, and it can't be allowed to just be another thing that's happened. There needs to be more from it. So whether that's them taking the responsibility or whether it's the BHA actually finding some way to have some kind of effect upon Ashim.
I think that's right. And I think as you say, Pete, people will naturally have empathy for Ashim and his situation because, as he's spoken about in the past about his issues with alcohol, and I think most of us will know or have known people with similar issues in the past. I suppose the problem is when those issues manifest themselves in ways that can cause serious harm to other people which drink driving clearly is such an action. We should say that Oisin has apologised wholeheartedly for that. He said he knows there's no excuse for what he did. But drink driving is one of those things now that society quite rightly won't accept, won't tolerate. It's an example of behaviour that can impact other people. And you can argue, looking back, so too could arriving at a race course over the alcohol limit, the COVID infringement. They're all examples of behaviour, actions that could potentially cause damage to other people as well. And at some point, you just have to hope that there is that line in the sand.
But does it not need to be more than hope now, Lee?
Yeah.
You know, hoping only takes you so far, because Oisin Murphy sadly now has a track record of regulatory and, you know, law infringements. Does there not need to be more? There needs to be something more than, well, we'll all work with Oisin and we'll get through this and it'll be fine. Perhaps that's all it needs, but I'm concerned that this potentially won't be the last time something like this happens if it's not dealt with in a sufficiently meaningful way. Now, I he doesn't have to be hounded. He doesn't have to be showing everybody that he's sober every time he goes to the races or anything like this. You know, that's a given that he's going to be. But if we're only excusing it, if we're only finding empathy, then that's the wrong conclusion to draw out of this. And equally, if people aren't prepared to face up and comment about it, particularly those closest to him, and him himself saying it's good that he has apologised, then it's not going to have a desired effect. And in the end, we all want Oisin Murphy to be winning big races, being champion jockey, being the great ambassador that he can be. He's great with the public. He's great with kids. He totally gets it. But we can't want him to be ambassador on one side, and not be trying to sort out his misdemeanors, for want of a better phrase, on the other side. And we can't just have our cake and eat it.
Yeah. James, we need to move on. Would you just quickly, what was your take on what happened last night with Oisin?
Yeah, a lot of what Pete said, I would agree with. I would say, just to add on, perhaps rather than repeat Pete's point, is that the BHAs and their role in this, it very much felt to me as if, well, this was an incident that really happened outside of racing. This was in the evening. There's no link to driving to a race course or indeed anything like that. So it does feel a little bit like there's a bit of distance between this, because it's not directly on affecting racing and race courses and what the BHA regulates. However, I agree with a lot of what Pete says. You know, jockeys, like sports people anywhere and around the world, have a degree of ambassadorial roles. You know, you're a license holder. You're a symbol of the sport. You're somebody who represents that sport. And as such, you need to uphold certain standards. And this is way below those standards. And I mean, Oisin doesn't need me to tell him that. And the BHA don't need me to tell him that. There's a certain standard that you need to uphold. And it's important, not just for those involved, that those standards are upheld, but also as a voice for the future of the sport and how it looks. Because what we don't want to have a situation in is that jockeys and the sport itself is not behaving in the way it should be, because that's not going to be what is representative of what the majority of the sport is doing. So I think it's important that the BHA do necessarily take some sort of course of action, and whether that is including in the license and whatnot, I'm not sure. But I think it is important, because just because this wasn't necessarily a racing issue and didn't happen on a race course, these are ambassadors of the sport and they need to uphold certain standards. And it's up to the BHA to ensure that they do.
Lee, just before we move on, to show Murphy's enduring popularity, obviously it was public hearing on Thursday, so there was some members of the public joined us in the gallery as we were reporting on it. And there's one gentleman who clearly wasn't a regular in court in there snapping photographs of the hearing. Oisin Murphy was sat in a glass framed dock just in front of us. And after the judge passed his judgment, and everyone could leave, the fella asked Oisin Murphy for a selfie. So I'm not sure there's too many defendants who get asked for selfies in the dock. But obviously the gentleman was reprimanded by the judge for doing so. But, you know, the point being is that he remains a man who's greatly popular with the public.
Absolutely. And just a little segue here to about selfies. When I was at Royal Ascot a couple of weeks, 2 to 3 weeks ago now, after one of the races, I saw Keir Drabchan stop by a race goer and asked for a selfie. Another very high profile figure now in racing. And just quickly, Pete, developments on the Ammo Racing front last week in terms of personnel.
That's right, at their big flagship stables, Freemason Lodge in Newmarket. Rafael Ferreira, who'd been the private trainer at that base, is going to be stepping back. And Kevin Philippart de Foy, one of the town's newer residents, he's going to be taking over. So caught a few of us unawares, I think, particularly as Kevin owns his yard, Chris Wall's former yard in town. But clearly, you know, Keir Drabchin's never been afraid to take definitive action. He did say in a statement that it was always part of the plan that Ferreira would sort of set up Freemason and then sort of step back and work in a more background role. But, you know, they've been supportive of a lot of good horses there during that, a lot of expensive horses, I should say. So, yes, Kevin Philippart de Foy in, Rafael Ferreira out, or maybe not out, but not in the front line anymore. So, you know, it's just a continuing bold development by Ammo Racing, as is always the case.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, I think that pretty much wraps up the show for this week. James, what are you looking forward to as the week goes on?
Well, it's got to be Newmarket. It's Super Saturday, of course, on Saturday, but we haven't got as many races as we used to. Worth mentioning as well, Premier Racing continue to kick in. So not a Super Saturday, but cracking card at Newmarket. Can't wait for it. It's one of the great highlights of the summer.
What about you, Pete?
Looking forward to the July meeting as well, Lee. Obviously, the added intrigue of notable speech running in the July Cup. But I also just wanted to mention, and I'm sure it's the same for everyone on this show and within racing, we'll all be thinking of John and Amy Hunt, particularly this week. Very special people who had something horrendous happen to them. And, you know, we continue to send our love and have them in our thoughts always, but particularly this week.
Yeah, we absolutely do. Thank you for watching this week's edition of The Front Page. We'll be back next week. Until then, bye-bye.